Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the next episode of Rebooked. We did it, folks. We made a second one, which means we're going to be famous now. It's amazing. I'm kidding. But I'm Golden Boy, of course, or GB, joined. I always forget that because of eSports. And of course, joined by Matt Ruholt. We also have Jake Bennett joining us, as well as always. We're going to be chatting up. We got so much to talk about. But first, we launched a podcast, so it's actually pretty sick.
We're back, and we're going to do another one. So we're not totally infuriated by the process or each other or anything yet.
Yet's the key word. Yeah.
So far, so good.
Jake, how does it feel to be a star? You're a star now, man.
I mean, no different than usual. You
we're
get
all
used
nerds,
to it,
gentlemen.
You get
we're
used
all
to it. Huge nerd virgins.
As
I'm
if
a virgin
we didn't
as well.
Know that before. Yeah. We didn't know we were nerds before that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we then got told that we were bigger nerds than what we already knew to be. And honestly, whatever. You know, it's all great. It's fun.
I said this to you guys privately. Yeah. I said this, but I'll say it to you wrestling fans. And I love you. My whole career has been based around you. But you calling anyone nerds is pot and black kettle territory more than almost anything. We're all nerds and we love it.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. In case you're listening, you're like, wow, what are they talking about? So this is what happened. Matt decided to put together a video, just a little quick edit for the socials, do some standard marketing for the podcast, put it on his Instagram, and it popped off. As of right now, I believe it's done like over 150,000 views.
Yep.
Which is insane.
Almost 8,000 likes.
Yeah,
and hundreds of comments.
Yep.
And what I have come to the realization is people want this, man. They want to talk about these storylines. I think a lot. I felt like it was a majority positive. And also,
absolutely.
I don't care about the negative people, because those negative people, I ain't talking to them.
You know what, too? What I love about it, too, though, is like, yeah, of course, there's trolls on anything that pops off. So, yeah. Whatever. I've lived with that my whole career. But I love it was either positive or like, oh my God, what a cool way of looking at it. But also, it was just people spin foiling off their own, like, but wait, what if so and so did this? See, I disagree because I think this is going to happen. And it just sparked conversation, which is kind of the big thing.
That's what we want. Thanks for the engagement, pal. I mean,
you gain any followers, Jake?
I actually did. I didn't look before, but I got a few followers out of that.
See, the way I look at it is,
if you like-minded virgin nerds, I appreciate it.
Exactly. I look at it as you get like 10 people in a room, right? That's a comedy, club, right? Like that's awesome. For me, we had a decent amount of people listen, right? A couple hundred. That's a win for me. I think that's amazing.
Coming fresh out of the blue, like
dude,
it's hard to gain traction in this world where everybody's got a YouTube, everybody's got a podcast, everybody's got a Twitch channel, whatever it is. So to latch onto anything in this world, it's fun, and we're having fun doing it.
Yeah,
that's the big thing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I'm pumped, and we got a tweet from someone that was like, I just listened to the podcast. This stuff like this is exactly what I was looking for. I felt the same way. That's why, we decided.
That's why we're doing it.
That's why we're doing it. So in any case, let's go ahead and dive into what's been going on in the world of wrestling, because we've had some developments. First things first, we're going to talk about our AEW world champion, Samoa Joe, who, it's just, we gush about him all the time. We gushed about him last week. We talked about how great he is. But last week's Dynamite, the promo, the conflict between him and Hangman and Swerve, and the way that it's this triple threat, but Joe is really well established in the feud. I really like it. How are we feeling right now about it, though?
I mean, to your point, what I really liked is this. As far as we're going to talk about narrative. As far as narratively driven, you could argue a good chunk of it on paper is all about Hangman and Swerve.
Yeah.
They have got a long, very recent history, literally blood feud, right? Mm-hmm. That's where the real heart of the narrative. So in it could easily end up where Joe, just as the champion, is the guy waiting for, all right, he gets both of them, and he just sits there and waits for Revolution. But, like, the way he kind of, even just, he let them have their stage in that promo that they had last Wednesday. It was Wednesday, right? I'm not thinking of.
Yes,
the,
yeah, it was last Wednesday.
So he let them have their moment. They got to tell their story, and then he closed it out, reminding you, reminding everyone that, like, oh, wait, you know, what was it? Godzilla Preacher is still here. So, as Jake coined last week. But, yeah, so I love the fact that, like, he let them have their stage, let them have their story. That's where a lot of the meat of that narrative is. But then that reminder of, like, I'm not just here. I'm here to kick your asses.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah, I what I really liked about it is I think it kind of I don't know. To me, it kind of foreshadowed what the problem is going to be in this triple threat, where and I kind of think the direction that it's heading is Hangman and Swerve are so preoccupied with their hate for each other that they're forgetting about Samoa Joe. All right, like it's the Raptors at the end of Jurassic Park fighting each other, and then oh shit, there's a T-Rex. We forgot about the T-Rex. And he wipes both of us out, and that's what it feels like. It's got, like Joe. I like. I feel like a lot of heel champions you see are kind of sit back and they're pouty about I shouldn't have to defend my title against two people in a triple threat anyway, but Joe's like, I don't give a shit, I'm going to literally murder both of you, and whatever order you want to do it in is fine by me. Like it's I love him just sitting back, and he's like, I'm gonna let you get weak, and then I'm just gonna start picking the bones.
And you're done.
He gives that great, like, legit. Even though it's all wrestling, it's all a big show, he gives that a great feeling of that prize fighter vibe.
He does.
Yes.
Like, legit, I'm here to compete. I'm ready to go anytime, any place. He's not playing the chicken shit typical role.
Yes.
Which, that's a great role, too. But, like, for him, what he does works.
Yeah. It couldn't be that way for him as well, right?
No. Because it would feel weird.
Well, you know, let's like, go back to, like, when Joe showed up, right? It was off of, I think, he wanted to make a statement, probably for the character, comes in, becomes, I think it was ROH TV champion for a little while, holds that belt for a minute, then holds the, I think, the ROH World Championship as well for a brief while. Or I could be wrong, unless it was Claudio. But in any case, though, like, he comes in, gets gold with Ring of Honor, establishes himself just in that thing. And you could feel however you want to feel about the Ring of Honor AEW crossover stuff. But it was all in service of building to this run, is what I think is happening right now. I think that they have recognized that they haven't really had a monster champion in AEW. I mean, I'm trying to think, right? Like, you know, you had, obviously, Mox. You had MJF and Hangman. You had CM Punk for a day. You had, who else? Chris Jericho, right? Like, these guys aren't, like, big dudes. So we haven't really had a story that took place around the title where the champion is a formidable opponent that isn't like John Moxley, who is a psychopath. So I think that that also opens up an avenue here for AEW to tell a completely different story. And I think that they're nailing this triple threat dynamic, because we were talking about it last week, I believe, but AEW needed to reset the belt away from MJF. And this was the best way to do it. Have Joe come in, say the pecking orders changed, everyone's got to earn your spot now, and then that's when you build up to it, and you already have this lingering feud. But that then leads to the Hangman stuff, because I feel like Hangman he's doing good work right now. I love this approach that he is taking of, like, the desperate cowboy. I'm digging it. I think it's working for him.
I think for him, he's, you know, you talk about resetting the title. I think you need a reset of Hangman a little bit. In a lot of ways. So, like, and this is, we talked about a little bit, whether it was like an official thing or whether it's kind of a work in progress. I think it's a bit of a work in progress. I think this triple threat match will really help it. But, like, that little do-si-do,
this should be the tip.
Both Swerve and Hangman. We're going to see Swerve. Because especially with Swerve, you don't want to rush that baby face. You don't want to shove him, turn him into some fire breathing, you know, let's go, ladies, kids, high five kids on the way to the ring. Like, of course, nobody would buy that. And so I like it. And same with Hangman. You don't want him just all of a sudden wake up one day and be a bad guy. Because you need this.
Right, the slow burn is important.
Their motivations, though, are important. And right now they both have their, you know, Swerve is on the cusp. He's on the precipice. So he's here to prove himself. Hangman's desperate to hang on to that. And, you know, that thus his downplaying of Swerve and stuff in the promo. This should only be between, four, you know, actual champions, blah, blah, blah. I like that motivation from Hangman because he makes him a piece of dirt. But you didn't beat him either. You know, like, it's that great heel stuff where it's like what he's saying is true, but it's easily argued.
And this is where I'm going to give AEW a little flack here because I think they could have given themselves a real easy, like, win. If you go to the AEW website, and I believe I'm going to see if I could locate it, but if you go to it, you'll notice in the rankings, they have Swerve over Hangman. And I would have approached it, I would have had it be the opposite. I would have had Hangman just be over Swerve just for the story's sake of him being like, because I was a champion, I'm above you in the rankings and I deserve the opportunity. Like, have him just go full batshit crazy, right? And let him just really embrace his like, because he's desperate, right? This is what it's kind of leaning toward, because it also feels like they're kind of taking some similar inspirations from like what's going on with Drew's story over in WWE, Drew McIntyre, where it's this like, is he a bad guy? Is he not a bad guy? His motivations seem pretty bad, but he hasn't done anything inherently bad, and I really love that line that they're straddling, but I think they could have given themselves just some more ammo to reinforce the narrative a little bit more.
I actually like him being ranked behind Swerve because to me, if you really want to build on him having this desperation, him all constantly being a step behind when he thinks it's not deserved or whatever. I like that. That draws the desperation out of him even more, I think. Like, there's no way I'm behind this guy. He can't, like, even these little, he can't even have a little victory, you know? And I really like what Hangman's doing and kind of how they're turning this character. I'm going to get real nerdy here. You ready for this?
Okay, go for it. Go. Oh, yes.
Here we go.
We both did the same thing.
Go for it.
Hangman is like Dutch Vanderlyn in Red Dead Redemption 2.
Okay, show your work.
That's how. Well, I mean, think about it. Everything had a plan, right? At one point, they were on top of the world, you know. And then shit goes awry in Blackwater, and then from then on, it's just trying to get back to where they were, get back to that point. We just need this, so then we can do this. But they keep having setback after setback after setback. And what happens? Dutch starts to fucking lose it. Like, he starts to go a little nuts. The people around him who care about him most are starting to question his motivations and question his decision making. And that's just what we see more and more of. It's been this slow burn, right? This, you got to cook that meat low and slow, baby. That's when you get the best stuff, right?
Get it.
Nice, that's what they're doing.
Nice and tender, you know?
Absolutely.
I don't know what this is. I don't know why I keep doing this.
I don't know what that
is. This is me making meat.
It's like an old-timey video camera. I don't
know. Yeah, I really, like, I just love the way that we're handling a lot of these faces who, you know what, really served the objective that they needed to serve at the time, right? Drew McIntyre is a world champion during COVID. He was a great champion, even though his run was always going to be marred because of the situation. And then, of course, you had guys like Hangman who really, that story of him and CM Punk, that war that they had, that fight, that was so well done, but it was clear that there was like more directions that they wanted to go in, but then, like, you know, things went south in another way. So I feel like now they have a good grip of the direction that they need to take.
100%. And something I would love to see them do from a character perspective, from a story perspective, is call back to, let's not forget that, again, my history might be a little bit, the first major paper, what was it? Was it All In? Not All In.
Double or Nothing, right? Oh, the first major pay-per-view
AEW,
for them. Yeah.
Their pay-per-view, right? That's when Jericho won the title. But it was Hangman.
Oh, no. That was
it?
All Out. That was All Out. I called that one. Yeah. Sorry. So that was Hangman Jericho.
Yeah. So, but I get my point being that he didn't win the title. He's always been obviously desperate to be that guy. But from the very beginning, he was in that position. He was in the main events. He was the guy the company was looking at. Now a couple of years have gone by, and he's desperately trying to hang on to that ledge.
Yeah.
And I hope they play into that because, like, it looked like he was the fucking guy. Maybe not right. Jericho, right? He's the name brand we're going with him. But it was clear that they were building.
Yeah. This is the next in line. This is going to be the next guy. Yeah, it seemed like they were building him for that. Absolutely.
And they did. They pulled the trigger eventually, but it was just that idea of we're starting this whole wave. You're one of the guys, and then kind of to fall back behind the wave. And now he's just desperate to.
And that's why, even though there was external drama with the CM Punk Hangman Adam Page fight, I liked that Punk won because it fit this narrative of, and it depended on where they were going to go with it, of Hangman saying that he had to protect AEW from Punk, right? And had they kept going down that path, man, there could have been some really sick stories, because surprise, surprise, they did the exact same thing with Seth Rollins when Punk showed up. They tried to do the exact same thing, but then he got injured again. So it was just really tough for them to push that, but there's this nugget of a story there that's just so good, and I wish we could get that opportunity to pull the trigger on it, but it doesn't seem like it's going to happen anytime soon, at least definitely not for Hangman and CM Punk. So that's why this pivot that they've made, or I shouldn't even say pivot, but this, I guess, slow kind of burn that they've had of Hangman slowly but surely turning, it's really exciting. He's been a face with the company since the company started.
And I hope he keeps losing it. I hope he just continues to split.
He needs to eat the pin at Revolution, in my opinion.
Yes.
And that's
the story
that way.
Yeah. And they're doing with him what I thought they were going to do with Becky Lynch and what I thought they might do. It seemed like they were hinting toward it with Kofi after he lost the title to Brock always been this, positive person. He's been the mainstay, everyone that they, everyone's looked to them as kind of a guiding light of where the company's at. And it just was like that taken away from them. And it just drives them slowly, slowly crazy. I actually thought we were going to see a heel turn from Kofi at one point, just for a little bit while New Day tries to bring him back to reality. And
yeah,
then I thought they were going to do it with Becky.
Yeah.
So that's why I hope it seems like people like to hint at going that direction and then it just kind of peters out. I really hope they just full bore make Hangman nuts.
Yeah.
That would be fascinating to me.
Yeah, I agree. That would be, especially when you pair that with what's going on
with
the
Young
Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you got a lot of carnage happening. I actually, to speak on that real fast, I do like what the Young Bucks are doing here. My only thing genuinely is just that it just feels weird that it's Sting's final match. And it's going to be for the tag
and
team
titles.
And he's
the reigning champion.
And he's the champion going into it.
Right.
But we never really had a situation where belts have kind of been used as props like they were in old WWE back in the day. So I guess I'm kind of okay with it, for once. But eventually I would like to see them just establish a tag team division again and get back to business.
That's something that is definitely needed.
I was promised good tag team wrestling in AEW. And I get good tag team wrestling, but I also want good tag team storytelling, and I feel like we're just not really getting that right now with a lot of the narratives. This is the most story that we're getting for tag team titles in quite some time, because to my knowledge, it's mostly just been, I want to beat you up and win the title, and then that's it. And we've had excellent matches, I cannot stress that enough, but it's just something I've slowly but surely just came to that, not realization, but the for me, I'm like, I just need investment. I need story. Yeah. So I am invested in what's going on with the Young Bucks, Sting, and Darby Allin. It's just weird because it's the Young Bucks back fighting for tag team titles again. Felt like we could have gone maybe a different route, but I don't know. Maybe this was Sting's choice, you know?
And it's also something that's tough, especially with championships involved, when you know there's an expiration date. We have a date. That's Sting's last match. So no matter what happens, like, you can't even make, in theory, much of...
You can't even fantasy book it.
Right, because it's like, all right, well, Sting's going to get back at him if they do that. Well, no, because he's done. I guess you could keep doing stuff with Darby. He finds another part, stuff like that. But, like, it does take a little bit of a factor out of it, so which eliminates a little bit of that potential story going forward.
And speaking of that, I want to get your guys' thoughts on this, because this is the one that has bothered me the most, and it's not... Because I don't think the match is going to be – the match is going to be fucking phenomenal. But Will Ospreay versus Konosuke Takeshita, I am so perplexed by why we're getting this match. Again, it's going to bang, okay? It's going to be so good. But I just I struggle to feel like I want to care about it. I know it's going to be a great match, but outside of that, that's it.
That is it. It was a reach of a reason to make it.
Yeah, like oh, there's no one better to fight us.
We just need a reason to book this match.
It's like there was a spot on the card, and they were like, "Well, what do we do?" Well, shit, I don't know. I guess
do a 5-star match. Okay,
Will's going to be in the U.S. by March 5th, so let's just get it done.
The only thing I can think that they may be doing is that it's starting to try to split the Don Callis family. Like, well, that's the only thing. That's the only thing I can really think that this is going to do. One of them's going to win, or maybe one of them wins dirty. Even
dude,
it's like,
Ospreay's a baby face though, dude. He's the biggest. Yeah. Like, he plays a heel in various promotions, but like
he's coming in as a face. 100%.
The momentum, the matches he's had over the last year, he's the biggest baby face in the world. Like,
there's literally videos of him crying, thanking everyone. It's making the rounds. Like, there's just no way he doesn't come into this joint with full on babyface energy, just radiating, shining lights. You know what I mean? Just white meat, just walking down there, doing his thing, kissing babies, high fiving. It's going to be very cool. And then you got Konosuke, who could really benefit from being the bad guy here. You know?
And he's an excellent, excellent, excellent performer. He's still, in the large scheme of things, still getting his feet wet in, TV, weekly wrestling, that kind of thing. So he still needs a little bit of that seasoning, especially from characters.
If you don't mind me asking, because, you've done it, what is the difference? Like, from doing independent type of shows to doing... like weekly television, like you did.
It's so a lot of
cameras.
I mean,
GB, what kind of?
Well, yeah. Number one, work to hard cam kids. Yeah. But really, you really have to be on your P's and Q's with your character and everything, because you can go to some random independent promotion in Iowa. Don't get me wrong, everything is filmed, but canon, right?
Yeah,
it's not, You don't have to play your storyline in XPWF
on a
Saturday night. You can have a kind of a ha-ha match, or you can have this kind of match.
Work a face or go work a heel. Don't really matter.
Right? Yeah, but TV, you've got to know your character. You got to know there's things I can do and I can't do, and stuff like that, that's going to help push
and
this
what will be
forward.
Ospreay's character, because you see, like, that is always where I get worried about a lot of these guys, right? Because
I'm good.
Yeah, and that could be because that's Logan Paul's character right now, is I'm good, but I'm an asshole. But I'm good and I'm a babyface. We'll see.
So one of the best pieces, and he would always give us a bunch of different nuggets, but William Regal, who was a big part of NXT, big part of like talent recruitment for a while in WWE. And we used to laugh because he would give these speeches all the time. I love Darren, but he would get, so like we would kind of like chuckle, like, here we go, we're going to get this one again. But he made really great points was he would come down to like NXT to all the recruits and stuff and be like, tell me about your character and stuff like that. He goes, because if you stand up here and you go, I'm the best wrestler in the world. At the time, he'd be like, we have Daniel Bryan. Why do we need you?
Yeah.
okay, okay. I'm this guy. Look, we've got a guy who wears black and drinks beer. You know, we've got a guy who's the best technical wrestler.
We got the emo guy.
We got the demon guy. What else do you bring? Bring something else to the table. And we are in a place where, like, again, with the rise of independent wrestling, the internet and stuff like that, people do like the just like wrestling for the sake of wrestling more. But it's still like that's one of my critiques.
But think about
of AEW
the brands.
Far.
They build brands right now, like the EST, right? Mm-hmm. Or Seth freaking Rollins or Hangman Adam Page. Like, it doesn't necessarily need to be Doink the Clown, even though, don't get me wrong, we still fucks with Doink the Clown.
Yeah, but don't disparage the name of Doink the Clown.
No, excellent character work, but it's just, you don't need that necessarily, but you also need to find an edge, right? Am I interpreting that right?
Essentially, even like, look, everybody's out there trying to be the best wrestler in the world. You know, there's only a couple people who have the kind of gravitas or like aura about them, and they are special athletes that can just be. Yeah. Like Gunther is one of those guys, right? You know what I mean? Like Roman is kind of what, and even he, you know, ended up with, you know, Tribal Chief, head of the table stuff. But
yeah.
Like Seth
even
Rollins,
he had to find a character. Yeah.
Seth Rollins is arguably one of the best proficient athletes in professional wrestling today as well. Has been for a long time. But even he has gone from the architect to Seth freaking Rollins.
The Messiah.
The Messiah. Now he's the revolutionary. He's the fashion model, essentially. Yeah. You know, he went high-end fashion guy for a while, like superstar.
I loved it. It's so good.
Because you have to have that thing on top. You can't just be, you know, player two.
Yeah.
Put your fists up. Really good wrestler.
Well, and that was the problem that Daniel Garcia, I think, was having for a very long time.
And then he shook his dick around, and he's fucking awesome.
And now he's over. Over like Rover.
And ding, 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 he can still go with the best of them.
Every time. It's it is so, like, you really start to see when that wrestler makes that shift over, when that character work, when they
when
start to understand their character.
Yes.
That's what we were saying about Swerve Strickland last week, right? Like, he knows his character to a T. He's got this thing locked down. And yes, his gimmick is, I am a great pro wrestler, but it's different.
It's so much more than that.
Okay, all right.
It's just, he's, especially over the last, like, year or so, his gimmick is he's a dangerous, sadistic dude kind of thing. And you know what? The other thing is little things like Prince Nana helped him. And, you know, it's silly. He started dancing too, right?
Yeah,
he's got the dance too. But one of the things I've loved over the last little bit of time, and this is just like, it's not really written into the story, but it's a visual thing that everybody picks up on, is that dance kind of got over, went a little viral in the wrestling community. And then Strickland walking out behind him was such an opposition. Nana comes out doing this. Everybody's like this. And then Swerve walks out like the boss in the room.
Yeah.
Kind of like, not side-eyeing it, you know, but it gave that juxtaposition between like, all right, it's all one package, you know. Nana and Swerve. Because
it's his house.
Because it's his house and everything like that. But yeah, just letting you know, like, I'm the badass. I'm the boss. I'm in control.
Yeah. Oh man, dude. You're so right. Swerve, he's got such a dial in on his character. You know, another one that's got a great dial in on their character, Rhea Ripley, right? Another great just understanding of like, who is mommy, right? Like, you mean to tell me you got this girl from Australia going around, you know, calling herself mommy, you know, like that's just genius. It really is. It's silly. And Dominic Mysterio. Another, I would go as far as to say right now, as far as characters go, Dirty Dom is nailing it. Like, that kid is nailing it.
Yeah.
That was great.
Him character-wise, and even his in-the-ring stuff, I'll tell you, I watched Rampage this past week, and I hate to say this, but Sammy Guevara seems like what we thought Dom was going to be a little bit.
Ooh, okay. Show your work.
I see what you, I can already
Well, I mean, like, look, it all just, when Dom came in, it was like, okay, he's Rey he kind of just looked like
Rey Mysterio's son.
This pudgy kid who happens to have a famous dad in wrestling.
Yeah.
And he's going to come in, sure, let's give him a chance and see what he's going to be. And it just at first, like, wasn't really working. And yeah, then
it was very clear it was Rey Mysterio wrestling with his son.
Correct. You know? And then when he figured out his character, there was that switch that flipped, and there is no one that has heat like Dominic Mysterio. Yeah. It's wild. Whereas Sammy was the other way. I feel like he started off hot and he's kind of petered off a little bit. And I think he doesn't really know who his character is anymore. You know, I feel like Sammy Guevara needs a reset.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that comes down to, with Dom, obviously stuff like Judgment Day and everything was huge in and of itself.
Yeah, it was a catalyst for him to
do that. Mm-hmm. Just being a part of that group, but embracing a lot of the things that they did and that he did. I know so many wrestlers, especially in this business, they're so type A personality, so alpha. Mm-hmm. They have such a hard time doing anything either A, potentially funny, because that'll get them pigeonholed, right?
You can't take them seriously anymore, right?
Yeah, right? Or what I call low status, right? They don't want to play anything low status that makes them like they're actively playing someone who's less than. Dom kind of did that, like with the, he went to jail for 3 hours, but acting like, he's that guy in the sitcom that you don't laugh at, but he willingly did it and then played it up. A lot of guys are afraid to do that because like, well, I'm going to look like a wuss, or I'm going to look like this. I'm going to look silly. And it's like, dude, no. You need to commit to that character. And he did. And really quick, I think that's something Sammy Guevara hasn't really done yet. He's just like, I'm Sammy, and I'm a really good wrestler. And I'm like, I know he's got the personality in him.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, you go to his YouTube channel.
Yes.
He's got such a I've chatted with him once or twice. He's a nice guy. He's very,
he seems very charismatic, and he seems
joyful. Joyful dude,
Needs that hook. Needs that hook.
Yeah. And I think that is what they were kind of hoping maybe with Jericho, but I think, I don't know why, but I just feel like Jericho's slowly but surely, storyline-wise, just starting to section away, drift away a bit more. Because
it was also group after group after group for a while there between what was it, like the Pinnacle and I already forgot.
The Inner Circle,
Jericho
Appreciation Society.
God,
there was too much. But to Jericho's credit, which I will say, he brought in a lot of people and then tried to create something 100%. Around them. Whether or not it worked out, I can appreciate the effort.
Yes.
But where it affected, I think, Sammy is that now we really got to start to peel him away. And, you know, obviously there was the incident with Jeff Hardy in the match and stuff. But, you know, those things
happened.
Which one? He, landed on his face.
No, I mean, which time? Hasn't he hurt the Hardys, five separate times?
Oh, no. I didn't know that. I forgot.
Well, didn't he have the one?
The Stadium Stampede.
The Stadium Stampede.
Oh, yeah. But that match just seems like it's... It was awful. Utter carnage.
For injuries,
I can't see how anyone comes out of that and doesn't have something fractured. Absurd. But, I think now, maybe we retire the Spanish God. We see where he can take it, and hopefully there's a direction for him. But if anything, you got to look at some of the prime examples in AEW. And to me, right now, for my money, across the board, I would even go as far as to say across pro wrestling right now, the best character is Timeless Toni Storm. Mm. She is just nailing it. Simply put, it doesn't matter the feud she's in. It doesn't matter the amount of time she gets, the type of segment, whether it's a sit-down interview, whether it's a standing interview, whether it's an in-ring interview, whether it's a vignette, whether it's just a standard shot, whatever it is, she nails it every damn time because she gets exactly who this character is. And
right. And it's not just that. Like in even in comedy, there are very few people who they just completely commit to a bit.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, as crucial in comedy as it is in wrestling.
Best advice I ever got when I did improv. That was so cool.
Yes, commit to the bit. That's the one of the things they always teach you in improv. And like I said, like Will Ferrell is maybe the best at it. Even if the gimmick the bit is not working, he still goes 100% at it.
Yeah.
And pulls something out. He turns chicken shit into chicken salad somehow. And Tony's doing that same thing. She's completely committed to the bit and will not falter. I think that is so huge for someone who's doing something like that.
What I appreciate about it, whether intentionally or not, I cannot imagine a world where it's not intentional, is she took something, as somebody who did a gimmick that was like throwback black and whitey.
You're the OG for me, for my money. You know, like I remember watching that and loving it, you know? Yeah.
And to be fair, I don't think we even got to scratch the surface on what we could have done. Talking about what Tony has done, she has taken something that can easily, when people do stuff like that, especially those kind of throwbacky characters, it's so easy to stop at surface level. I'm going to dress old timey and maybe use Sucker and Succotash in a promo, like, and that's it. It becomes a black and white cartoon, right? They do Steamboat Willie, which somebody should do that because you can do that now.
Exactly.
Sure, you can. That's right. Yeah. It is public domain.
Coming to an indie near you world. Okay.
Welcome to the ring, Steamboat Willie. He comes out like,
and it's just a white guy doing Ricky Steamboat gimmick. That's all it is.
I'm with it. That's great.
Clip it.
Oh, okay. So it's
she took something and it could have easily been very, very surface level.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. Just say some old timey phrases and have a black and white entrance. But she added layers to the character of not only so it's, I love this like almost like troubled starlet kind of thing.
Yes.
Like she could have just done a Marilyn Monroe impression one time and kind of done, but it was like this star, but then she's kind of got a screw loose. Like she's that fallen starlet, like who used to be on top, and like this is especially before.
And
she
again,
won the
a
title.
Very, very similar gimmick, you know, from like what we're seeing right now. It always works out, but it's about the theme and how you get there.
And then, on top of it, so it's like, oh, she kind of is a crazy person, but it's like no. But then she's also like really funny, like coming up with some of these like insults and stuff she does that like that
chin
don't
up,
sound like,
out.
Yes,
it's just too good.
it feels. I mean, I don't know. If she's a big Mrs. Maisel fan or something like that, but they do. It feels kind of
funny thing. My friend who watched her said the same exact thing.
Yep.
Was like has to watch the
has
what is
to.
It the Fabulous Mrs. Maisel or whatever.
Yeah. The Marvelous
I haven't
Mrs.
seen
Maisel.
It, but I heard it's great. I heard it's a fantastic
show. Good. And just the way, so she took these insults that you would throw in a wrestling promo that sound different than what The Rock says in his insulting promos, what so-and-so anybody else says. She's really made herself stand out, not only from the presentation, but the character, and taking it to more than just one level. I love it.
Yeah.
It's so
good. I can't wait for her to get caught with like Quaaludes and opium or something like that. In some opium den.
Passed out in the bathtub in a Sunset Boulevard motel.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be so good. And also, too, like they've been doing, like they had this vignette for her this week where she was kind of recapping
Wedding.
The history of her and Deonna Purrazzo, who has also been great in this feud.
Which
as well,
I like. I appreciated that as someone who's been
straight.
Coming in fresh. Is seeing, I didn't know the history between it. That's good stuff to see. Now that makes me more invested in that storyline. So I really liked them doing that.
I agree.
Am I the only one, though?
Okay.
Who I think they started this. We're talking about a little bit of fantasy booking. Here's my fantasy hat. She's always been Toni Storm. She didn't change her name, so it's not a totally like new character. She stayed Toni Storm. But I'm like, and they did a little bit of this at the beginning, but I wanted her to almost go throughout this, at least until this match, of being like with Deonna and being like, who the fuck are you? Like,
yeah.
I've been
just
so busy.
No seller the whole time.
Making films, winning championships, doing all this. Like,
yeah.
You keep saying, I know you. Like, darling, I have no idea what you're talking. And they did a little bit of that, but I almost wish they would have gone into, like, the match. Deonna could be the one just telling the story, like, over. Like,
yeah.
Let me show you footage. Let me show you pictures from my photo album. Let me show you my phone.
But then, see, I think the only thing to play devil's advocate on that is that it would seem a little desperate of Deanna to do that. Because what does she really care? She's here to win championships, not make friends. She established that very quickly in her opening promo. I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but
I think she could have used that as a means of you're overlooking me. You know what I'm capable of, and I'm going to show you what I'm capable of. Like if you do it from the perspective of like, the person who got rich and forgot where she came from kind of thing. If you lean into that a little bit more and be like, hey, you're also here because I helped you get here. Kind of maybe do that in a way of, you know, we learned from each other.
And that being from Deanna's point
lucky.
Of view.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
No, I agree. There is there are a few directions that they could have gone, but I do like that they're just playing this very straight for Deanna because, honestly, it's like, I don't think she's going to win the title. I don't think she should win the title. I don't think it's necessary for her to. Deanna Purrazzo is an excellent wrestler who will find success pretty much anywhere in the division, elevates the division simply by just being a part of the division.
Yes.
So I could see her realistically scrapping it up with someone like Julia Hart for the TBS title, or maybe, you know, get into a feud with, Athena for the ROH women's title. Like, there are directions I think they can go for her that isn't necessarily just her fighting for the title and also for Timeless Toni Storm. She's just cooking right now. I feel like she's mid-story. And there's no reason to cut that because the belt only benefits her because it hoists her up. And it's just such a different way to do it.
But that downfall is going to be so fun to watch. It's going to be
so
fun.
She's
going to
have
so
much fun.
Yeah.
And you can tell she's just having fun. Yeah. She's like doing promos that like I've never really seen before, right? Like the last one, she just decided to go into the middle of the ring and just meander about and then just like say things, you know, and just ramble. Someone interrupted her. She insulted him from like the distance. It was just brilliant. Yeah.
I almost hope this becomes like her heel dude love. Like it becomes a personality that she like can access
can go back
later.
To, like,
Yeah.
She's got like the badass, I'm going to kick your ass Australian girl gimmick. And then she's, which is like her Cactus Jack. And then she's got the, I would really love that.
I would think that would be great. Yeah.
Yeah. They could do like a, what was it? One of those casino battle royales or something like that. And she could just be the Joker. just show up as like a different version of herself, man.
Yeah.
She's great. And I think though that also kind of runs counter, in my opinion, to what's happening in WWE. With the women's division, because I personally don't feel like any of these feuds right now are built in a very strong way, and they're really trying to find their hooks, and I don't really get like I know why we're getting Nia versus Rhea at Elimination Chamber because you got to give Rhea a big match to make her look like a boss
to build her
going into WrestleMania
and in her home country.
And in her home country.
You got to feature her.
She's one of the hottest wrestlers in the world right now. So she's 100% going over at that event. So what – and I think Nia's been great. To her credit, I think she has been solid as far as being an antagonist, you know, just a bad guy. Because sometimes, like, the women's division struggles with just, like, a very crystal clear – bad guy, you know, like a monster bad guy as well. And Nia's definitely been checking that box and it serves the role very well.
I mean, this is all it's a pit stop to Becky and Rhea.
Yeah. But even then, that feels like a weak build up because it's very telegraphed.
It is very telegraphed. I just don't like
how telegraphed it is.
Yes, there's no doubt about it.
Unless there's a good reason for it, but they don't really have like, like there's no, there doesn't seem much meat on that bone other than what we were just complaining about with AEW of wouldn't that be a banger? Sure, it'll be a banger of a match, but why do I care? Give me more reason to care than just it'll be a great match because that's what puts it all over the top. I don't give a shit what you say in our Instagram comments. Yeah. Story puts matches over. It just does.
Yeah.
Yes. And it is. It's like the version of the wrestler going, "Yeah, I'm just the best."
Do you think that they're going to cook, though, Matt?
I think they – so, like, I have hope for post-elimination chamber. But what I – like, it'll be good. I think – there's no way it'll be bad. But my fear is that, you know, Becky, you know, when she gets to go her little – when she gets to go off the cuff and, like, really kind of go in on some of those promos, she's really entertaining. She's really – I think she's committed. She has a lot of conviction and everything. I think we'll see some – badass back and forth promos, like, but to that point, it'll still just be like, oh, I take kind of a shoot shot at you, right? That kind of like work shoot shot at you. We're gonna have a banger at Mania. Like, there's not gonna be some like
intertwining
story. I don't think it's gonna go down some big rabbit hole. I think it could. It's just gonna be a lot of like jaw jacking. It'll be good jaw jacking.
Hey. That's fine. Because funny enough, I was going to say this before. I get what you're saying about it being narrative, but it is nice, though, that like we can look at the women's division now in 2024 and be like, you know what? Great. Let them go ahead and just have a banger match. They're going to have a banger match. It's going to be great. Yeah. I'm fine with that, you know? Like, they've already they have set that flag firmly that, you know, like, women's wrestling and what they're doing in WWE and really just across the industry in general is the evolution, right? And they have I think they're allowed to just go out there and have a banger match with context.
Let me pitch a hypothetical then to you, not because I necessarily think that they should do this, but just to kick the old comment hornet's nest. Do you have, if you're trying to find some more tension between Becky and Rhea, do you have Damian cash in on Seth?
No.
I don't think so.
It shouldn't
either,
be in connection.
But I'm just trying to think right.
I know. And this is me maybe trying to think. Maybe I'm too woke, folks. I don't know. But that I don't like the idea of like having your women's tied to their man, you know, kind of thing.
Yes. I agree with that. Like, I'm just trying to think of I'm trying to think of a way to build some story into it, but
I would love to just see, like, even if again, like, it's just gonna, I feel like they're just gonna take shots back and forth. It'll be pretty good, and like they're gonna have a hell of a match, because
this is
gonna
feel like a passing of the torch match as well, because, you know, I mean, Becky has been an established leader,
right,
face of the division. This has really been, 2023 was the year of Rhea Ripley, and she's only just continued to get better,
and I think it'll stay that way too.
And it has to stay that way, because, but see, the problem is I'm curious what WWE's like now their goal is, because it seems like there's a big commitment to longer reigns, which I like, don't get me wrong. But I feel like the problem that the women's division in WWE had for a while is that Rhea Ripley was women's champion and was just on a like pillar of her own. And then everyone else was just behind her. And there was just no legitimate contender for her. It never felt like there was a threat in the division until like Nia Jax showed up. But again, we kind of see the writing on the wall with that one.
Well, and it's not Charlotte anymore because she's hurt.
Yeah, and it's not Charlotte, right? And then Jade Cargill, but it seems like they're waiting a while to pull the trigger on that one.
Yep.
So realistically, like, you know, you really got to start developing these women. Bianca Belair is a very formidable option, but I think that's a character that could also benefit from a little bit of a refresh.
I'd love to see her go back to kind of being heel like she was in NXT.
Yeah, right.
I would love to see that.
You know, I know that like she's such an inspiration and an incredible wrestler, but like, hey man, pull the trigger for a little while and then go back and do it.
Give her the Bailey treatment for a bit, and
yeah, it could be very beneficial. And then in that same token, it takes us to Bailey versus Io Sky, which.
We have a story here.
We have a telegraph story, but we have a story.
I was about to say it's very telegraphed. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But that's kind of what I mean. I at least appreciate that. I feel like it's been a while since we had, at least in the women's main event, other than a match that was, especially going to something like Mania, that wasn't just like you won the Rumble or you won Chamber. Now we're gonna fight at Mania. Like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah.
This feels, it's maybe not as
feels personal.
Yeah, it feels like some of those old, I might get a lot of flack, some of those old Attitude Era like storylines where, again, we were in a faction for a long time, it all explodes right before Mania, like, and maybe they're not pushing it as hard that way, but at least on paper, we have something like that, that has a little bit of meat to like why this is happening. There's a little bit of emotion involved in there other than just, I want to win. It's, you know, I want to show you, I want to prove both to myself and to you guys and for betraying me, blah, 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 friendships. I love that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, though, do they pull the trigger then? And I think if you are going to have a title change at Mania, this is probably
the
your
most likely,
best
I think.
One.
Yeah.
Yes. As much as I do like Io Sky, she's an incredible wrestler. I don't feel like her I don't know if there's like a term for this or if there's a perception on this, but it felt like Io Sky's championship reign was there to beget this story that we're now getting with WrestleMania and Bayley and her winning the Royal Rumble. And that kind of sucks because I wish that Io Sky was just being viewed as a champion in her own right rather than it needing to be connected to like whatever's happening with Bayley. At least that's my perception of it. I don't know if there's like if this is like a trope or something like that, where like a champion almost feels a little transitional.
I mean, transitional champion is often the kind of the term you'd use for that. I mean,
yeah.
And luckily though, I feel, cause when did she win when did she win the title?
She cashed in Money in the Bank. Didn't
right,
she? Isn't that
in
what
the
she
fall.
Did?
Was it this past fall?
I'm looking right now because, she cashed in Women's Money in the Bank at SummerSlam. SummerSlam.
In that regard, so like, while maybe this was in the back of somebody's mind, like, I'm telling you, WrestleMania isn't necessarily booked at SummerSlam. Maybe they had the idea of like, maybe this will lead to a damage control split up or whatever. But transitional champion would be more something akin to she won it at Rumble and then they did this thing. And it's like, she's going to hold it for a month and a half.
So in that case, then, did we feel like the run has been okay then, narratively?
So it's hard. Like, I don't want to fall on this. It is hard when your focus, when your title holder doesn't speak English as a first language. Yeah. They can't have a lot of strong promo moments.
Yeah.
I've loved that they've been cutting promos in Japanese. I love that Shinsuke's been cutting promos in Japanese. Subtitle them, cool. But it lets them be more natural. They're not sitting there thinking about what I have to say to try to find the English
word
for it.
They did the same thing with Andrade. They had him do a little bit of English.
I thought that was great.
It looked amazing. I'm totally with you there, Matt. Go on.
So, again, I wish they would give him more moments like that and everything like and stuff. So, it does feel like maybe it's been a little underplayed. The SmackDown Women's title for a long time feel like it's been a little underplayed with, like you said, with Rhea Ripley kind of dominating the women's scene.
And it's just so hard with the Bloodline narrative being so like prevalent. It almost feels like at times, you know, of course, not to disparage Seth Rollins because now I think it's established, but for a time it did feel like the Raw Women's title was like the main belt of that show. And then the Undisputed title was the main belt of SmackDown, and then the other titles were secondary, right?
Yes.
And then when those wrestlers weren't available, that's when you lean on your workhorse titles, your US and your Intercontinental, to like really drive that forward, which has been honestly brilliantly done. And we haven't really had that done like this in a super long time. I definitely get it. Now I'm wondering if that means then that with Bayley winning the title, will that lead to a, you know, like, where does she go from there, I guess, right? And
that's always the question.
I think she'll be done with Damage Control. I don't
know.
I mean, Io and Asuka and like they don't seem like they're going to just let that lie. How they've been presented themselves before. I don't think that they're gonna. I think they're gonna try to make Bayley's life hell if she wins that title.
I don't think they think
she can win it now.
And post WrestleMania is always a time for those like WrestleMania
to revisit
backlash,
the same feud.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you just take it up a notch. There's a gimmick match. There's a stipulation or something like that. But going forward from Damage Control, depending on how they play it, I think there's a huge opportunity to build Dakota Kai.
Yeah,
I mean, even if it is something as tropey and as you know, overplayed as, you know, oh, the two best friends who then like, but I want a shot at your title, and they give it. But I mean, but still putting Dakota Kai in a main event scenario with Bailey. They get it. Whether it's you do a turn, you could do that, or even if it's just like a, I've had your back, I would love an opportunity, and then they have a banger at freaking Money in the Bank or SummerSlam or something.
It that would really, be cool.
It elevates her, and now maybe you do have another contender in that top end of the women's division.
Yeah, I what I do think would be the route that they could potentially go, because you're not wrong. I mean, this obviously is assuming that Bailey wins, and this would be the direction that we go in here, right? But I kind of like the idea of Bailey losing and Dakota Kai doing the old MJF Cody storyline and throwing in the towel or something like that, like, or costing her in some way. Because that's also been the thing that they've been working on. Or it's the opposite of that. It's, you know, Dakota Kai's kind of been a little bit of a screw-up in some of these instances, and then she finally comes up clutch when she absolutely needs it, and then Bailey wins the title at WrestleMania. Sure. There are different routes, I think, that they could take with this. It just depends on, like, what they want to do with Damage Control afterwards, because I do think that the three, like them all not having gold, affects that group and their status. And it's really their only solid women's group stable thingy right now, right? I'm pretty sure. I can't think of anyone else.
As far as women only stables.
Yeah, women only stables. That, like, Damage Control is like your only one. Yeah. So, like, do you really want to get rid of your only stable by, not get rid of, but cheapen your only stable by Io Sky not having the title, but then like Asuka and Kairi Sane do? I don't know. Makes me wonder, right?
I don't think if I'll tell you this though, if you're talking about from a character perspective, if your credibility as a character, as a group, relies on a prop.
Ooh, okay, good point.
Then you're standing on shallow ground. So
good point.
But then you should be able to stand on your own.
But it's also the problem is because of the language barrier as well, right? Like, that also causes a little bit of a wrinkle in this issue,
which is why they had Bailey. Bailey was supposed to be that kind of spokesperson, the front woman.
Yeah, I do wonder where they go with that, but it's going to be exciting nonetheless, and we will get some new developments. We already got like Raquel Rodriguez is back, so which is huge.
Good for her too.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Hoping that, you know, we get even more from her, because she literally checks that box of the powerhouse, you know, person that could take on Rhea. She does that with in flying colors. You know, she's got to build, I think, a bit more of that character, but as far as her, she reminds me of early Rhea Ripley when she came in from NXT. Yep. Still very much the, you know, the emo yelling person, but it was great, right? Because she had that I'm going to be better than you character. But yeah. And then, of course, we have to talk about the storyline that has been keeping the wrestling world talking. The streets continue to chirp. Let's just dive into it. SmackDown. The Rock comes out looking like a $5,000 bill. My guy's got the gold.
But from like Spain or something, you know, like one of the very colorful bills. You know, that look like Monopoly money.
He has got this gold silky vest. He comes out. And the presentation, everything that they did, it's like on the one end, I'm thinking, they're geniuses. Whatever they're doing, they're geniuses. And then on the other side, like, there's just no way. They have to be just making this shit up as they go along, because some of the things just seem so inconsistent. But I personally loved Trailer Park Trash talking Rock. And apparently there are a lot of conflicting opinions on that subject. Curious to hear your guys' take.
I mentioned this to you guys. I kind of hated the segment.
Okay, why? When you said that, bro, it
shattered my brain. I wanted to wait to get here. So I'll preface it by saying, not necessarily the content. The Rock is great. He gets, especially as a heel.
He had those people in the finger of his, like, just here.
Dude,
right here.
Yeah. My issue, and I had this issue a little bit at the press conference, but it just exploded on SmackDown, is that it's suffering a little bit. I think the ship will right in my mind. I know it will, but just in this moment, they pivoted, and they almost pivoted so hard. It's like my least favorite heel turns in wrestling, where it's like, it's the ultimate babyface, and then they decide, well, you're going to turn on like your partner. And then all of a sudden, yeah, they're wearing black. And
well, it's Hogan.
Being like, you,
it's
yeah.
Hogan.
It's like, God, why? Like, why do you change over the – why can't we watch the change? Why can't we see you, like, break down over weeks? I like being told that story instead of just – occasionally a swerve out of nowhere is like,
it's a
great surprise. But, like, sometimes, especially with this, because they had The Rock come in, and like we said, hugging Cody. It was weird. The pivot, I wish we would have, like, had this bubble, especially at the press conference of, like, what, instead of being, like, sure, like, having them walk out together and everything, it's like, is this going to be a three-way? What's going on here? This feels very tentative and everything. And then have The Rock come out, and then eventually maybe the slap comes, you know,
a little
on
bit
SmackDown,
later,
even just a week or two. But the idea of, like, this all of a sudden turned into, and I get it, the motivated, like, you can't mess with my family, only I can, a little bit, is what they're, how it started, right? That's kind of where this is about, the Samoa, you know, the Anoa'i family. And, but yeah, it just, it's so, and now The Rock's coming out in sunglasses and the old 1999, you know, style shirt vest. And like, oh, I'm like, what, because I loved the Pat McAfee interview. We talked about it last week.
Yeah.
Because he came in, he's like, look, Cody's got some wonderful, it was subtle, he got some wonderful fans. There's people who love his journey, and I do too. You know, like, he's, the kid's great. He worked his ass off. But then you got, then he the Cody crybabies. He peppered that in, and I'm like, yes, let me see like 2 weeks of this, and then The Rock smacks the shit out of Cody.
Yeah.
Not in 24 hours.
Yeah.
And it just seems so stark. To like, I am Dark Rock now. Like, he put the black, you know, it's Neo Rock or whatever.
Neo Rock, dude. Yeah, Gilded Age Rock or whatever.
Yeah, like a little too stark, a little too fast. Again, the content is great. It was entertaining. He's a great, great talker. Ran down everybody. It was awesome. But
it was
a little too much, too fast for me.
Yeah. No. What about for you, Jake?
The year was 1995, gentlemen.
What the hell?
The year was 1995. Michael Jordan had been retired the season before, playing baseball with the Birmingham Barons. He gets the Bulls into the playoffs, plays game one against the Magic, and they lost.
Uh-huh.
And a statement was made afterwards, 45 ain't 23.
Mm.
Because Michael Jordan came back wearing number 45. And what happened in that next game? Michael Jordan got his cape back. And he came out wearing number 23. And he whooped the Magic's ass. Scoring 38 points that game, if I recall.
Mm. Damn.
Friday.
So you feel like Rock did the same
Friday,
thing?
Friday, when Rock comes out in that silk vest, felt like Jordan coming back out in 23. That's how it felt to me. It didn't feel like Dwayne Johnson reliving the good old days and cosplaying as The Rock. It felt like The Rock came back out, stepped out of a time machine from 2002 and walked down that aisle and cut a classic promo. That's how it felt. It felt like I was watching The Rock again and not Dwayne Johnson coming to revisit his old high school.
Mm, oof.
That's
a good one.
Now, to your point, that all seemed quick, right?
Yes.
I'm amending my prediction for what I think is going to happen at Mania. Rock is turning on Roman at Mania.
You reckon?
Yes. And that promo, to me, is the proof. Because he did, like you said, Matt, he did seem to turn quickly. This, to me, felt like in the movie where the cop's going undercover and he's got to do a line of coke to convince the guys he's in with that he ain't a cop, right?
Yeah.
So, because also, if you listen to the beginning of that whole segment when Roman came out and Roman said...
You're one of them.
Roman said,
you're one of the conspiracy theorists.
Roman said, listen to what we say. Everything we say has meaning, right?
Yeah.
You could be right.
So, and Rock comes out And like I said, cuts this like scathing promo. It did seem quick. It seemed to come out of nowhere. And I think that was Rock's line of coke, man. I think he did a line and whipped out a spoon and a lighter and just kept cooking. Right.
Yeah.
That's what that felt like to me. It felt like he went so over the top from what he had been to convince Roman, hey, brother, it's you
We're
and
in this
me
together.
It's you Ooh. And me. Because one of the things that everyone gave Rock shit for after that segment was when they were all standing there doing this and Rock was doing that.
For some reason, he was doing this. I hate that happened. Because I'm like, no, that's too much.
Look at the camera cuts when he's saying, well, I'm going to make sure I do everything I can to be sure you don't walk out with that championship. And the camera cuts. He's pointing now, like, is that intentional? I don't know, but that's part of the fun of this shit, isn't it? Like, that's kind of what,
say that.
Because to me, that seems like, I don't know. That seems like an interesting way to go with this story is to have it seem like that this was the plan all along, that Cody brought Rock back and it, you know, cause we haven't had, he still has not addressed why he called the Rock and brought him back. I don't know if they ever will. I don't know if that's a good idea or not. But if it comes back and it's that moment where they were hugging in the ring when Rock first came back, and that's where they make their plan. Little whispers. We're going to take him down together, buddy. You and me.
Counterpoint.
We're going to take everything from him. Because if I'm going to take the family from him, that includes the Rock. I don't know.
Counterpoint. Let's hear it. Allow me to cook you if you don't mind.
Jordan in 95. That's my point.
I do like that, though. That is actually a wonderful analogy of like what we needed to see. I will agree wholeheartedly. Like, that was my problem with Twice in a Lifetime, where it was just like there was no like reason to care about that match outside of, you
It'll
know,
be a
the
banger.
Just being like, well, that's the thing. It wasn't even that much of a banger. It was like two really personable individuals that had awesome characters that just needed a reason to clash with one another. And you could just tell they were having fun, which ultimately is, you know, it's all perfectly fine. But when you market the match as Once in a Lifetime and then you, you know, run it back again for Twice in a Lifetime, you kind of have like to make it a little bit better the second go around. And the second go around didn't have that
didn't
either,
have the same
right?
Feel, yeah.
And I think it was because of that. I think that, and I could be way off base on this, but I'm sure that a lot of veteran wrestlers, when they think about, you know, their final runs or whatever, they think about like good moments and hype moments and not getting booed out of the building and things like that, right? Like having your moment once again, right? And I got to give Rock credit because, you know, he came back, he was getting booed, which was something that I don't think it bothered him, but I definitely wouldn't be
surprised
shocked if he wasn't surprised, if he was surprised
Absolutely.
By it, you know?
Yeah.
So he then goes, all right, well, let's pivot this plan and make some changes here. Where they're going, who knows? But one thing that I am seeing is that I think that this is The Rock taking over the Bloodline. And I think that this is going to lead to Rock Roman in a different, more meaningful way. I think that they're going to lose. I think I don't think Rock's going to eat a pin at Mania for sure if they do the tag match. I could realistically – that's another hard one. I really don't know where they go if they do a tag team match because someone's got to eat a pin somewhere.
I also don't How really do they... know the point of it because if they're – if like they're what comes out of that? Like, I don't feel like anything of importance comes out of that.
You get Seth Rollins on the card with two matches. You get Cody on the card with two matches. You
yeah,
get
but,
Roman on the
but,
card
but
with
if,
two matches.
But right, but if I'm a champion, why do I want to have two matches? Why do I not want to have one and defend my title with 100%?
Totally agree
I
with that, but, you know.
I mean,
company's got to make money.
I mean, I understand. I understand.
The tickets are sold.
Yeah, you're right. Never mind. Doesn't matter either way. So, yeah, you ain't wrong. Hmm. Fascinating.
I do think you have a, I think we addressed this a little bit last week. I think you have a unique opportunity, especially though as busy as The Rock is, being part of the TKO board, maybe he prioritizes WWE a little bit.
Yeah.
I think, like, he don't, again, he don't got to be there every week. He got to be there every couple months or something like that. But, man, you know, Roman loses at Mania. Next night on Raw, he's beaten out of the Bloodline, courtesy of The Rock, Solo, Jimmy. You know what I mean? Like,
and Jimmy and Jimmy don't like Roman. That's been established, right? Like, I think he's playing the character incredibly well. Solo, I don't think Solo gives. Even though Solo seems more into the cause, but it doesn't matter. It's whoever's the leader. He's just going to follow whoever is the leader.
It's the game. And me, Roman, maybe he, like, you could lead right into something. I think, like I've said it before, he goes away for a while. Then they're running roughshod. There's some back and forth with Seth and the Bloodline and Cody and stuff like versus the, you know, the Jimmys, the Solos. It probably would lose a little bit of steam, but man, you bring come back around at a SummerSlam, a Survivor Series next year at Rumble, that Roman Reigns music hits, the Rock's in the ring, giving orders. That's going to be a huge babyface.
Yeah. And you just give me that like, burn it, burn it, burn it. And he just starts walking out through the crowd, man. That would actually be super like hype.
I'm concerned about if Rock does take over Bloodline and Roman splits off like that, who gets custody of Paul Heyman?
I know.
We're not thinking about the children.
I think Paul takes a little bit of a break probably. He doesn't, you know, especially now that you have Rock, you don't really need. I mean, because that, like, Heyman's presence there was to really help elevate Roman, but you could also have them both together.
There's a huge opportunity there
to have to have Heyman and The Rock together would be fucking crazy. Man.
But who is Paul Heyman? I'd like to hear. There's two things I love about Paul Heyman. One, he's the ultimate rat, right? He's a rat of a character. He goes wherever.
Even had a rat tail.
Yeah, gets away from the water. He's getting off that sinking ship however he's got to, right? He's a survivor kind of thing, a scavenger. But over the last few years, I'll give him credit. Like, he's really established himself, like, as, like, loyal to Roman Reigns. So what if there's a situation, The Rock, you know, is like, Paul kind of thing, you're with us now, right? MF-er kind of thing. Yes, sir, kind of thing. But then over the course of months, he starts, like, leaking info to Roman or something. Like,
and
he, like,
oh, he's that would be like, nice.
Like, he's playing double agent. And kind of thing, and eventually he's the one who brings Roman back. Big
dude,
turn.
That would be
I
crazy.
Don't know. There'd
that
be some be fun crazy. Stuff there, though.
Yeah, that would be nuts. I would be all about that, though, because, or you can even go the route of like, well, Heyman turned his back on Lesnar, right? Like, what's not to say he'll do it again, right? A cheater's always going to cheat.
There's also that, yeah.
You know? So that's always a fun one that they can lean on, too. Heyman is going to most definitely play a pivotal role in wherever this story goes. I hope that it's not, you know, him just kind of like taking a step back. If he did, though, wouldn't be mad about it, because I think Paul Heyman has more than earned his flowers for all of his contributions to these storylines. Like, this doesn't happen without him and Roman cooking during COVID.
For sure.
And then now here we are. Say what you will. You could be frustrated about the fact that the matches have, yes, the matches produced have been relatively ending in the same way. But the stories told and the way that they have propped certain stars and built the show around it was just so freaking cool. I saw something on Reddit today. Someone said that the Bloodline era has lasted longer than the Attitude Era.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking, yep.
Which is bonkers, because, by the way, the de facto end of the Attitude Era was when Vince McMahon gave the chair to Stone Cold Steve Austin, because that was, like, literally it. You know, like, he won, right? It was not a great way to end that story. But anyway, and that, I think, is crazy. It is established an entire era of pro wrestling, this Bloodline, and it has elevated a lot of stars. I think Sammy, you know, keeps himself involved in a lot of these storylines. Kevin Owens, same thing there. LA Knight, you know, he just only continued to look great, right? Drew McIntyre has literally built his entire character off of the interaction that he had with the Bloodline.
So
Jay.
Launching pad for so
Jay. We have a new main event wrestler with Jay because of this storyline. And also the fact that Jimmy and Jay, like, real quick, that is another one where, remember, we were like, oh, I don't know where they're going to go with after Rumble. And they're back.
That's got Mania written on it, and I think there could be some great shit between them between now and then.
Oh, it's so exciting. There really has been some great storylines. There are a few more around the squared circle we could cover here before we wrap things up for this week. Random little wrestling things. If you haven't had a chance yet, the Orange Cassidy Matt Taven Texas Death Match was actually insane. Matt Taven is not a normal person. And the things that that dude put himself through, he dead ass ran across the ring and just vaulted himself over the ropes. At no point was he going to hit him. He was never going to hit Orange Cassidy. It was very clear he was aiming for the table. And my guy vaulted across head first and just went plah, right into the table. And that was like, I couldn't believe my freaking eyes. Like, that matchup was pandemonium. Anything that caught your guy's eye out there?
Yeah, why did they do it?
Well,
so, I mean, yeah.
Undisputed Kingdom and Orange Cassidy are having a feud for Roderick Strong.
Right.
So,
this has been, they did say afterwards
why they did it. They did say afterwards why they did it, actually. Matt Taven said he wanted to soften him up for when Roderick Strong beat him, because Roderick Strong will beat Orange Cassidy. He will be the international champion.
But then that makes Cassidy look dumb. I don't know. To me, that makes him look dumb of like, it's the same thing of, you know, previously that we were talking about of why do I want to have that match knowing that that's what's
also a reskin of a previous story that they already did with Orange Cassidy.
Right. And here's my biggest thing. And one of the biggest things that AEW does, because they do these matches, I think, way too often. If everything's special, nothing is special.
Correct.
And if you I get the reasoning. They've been in this feud with like the best friends and all this stuff a little bit, getting involved too for a couple of weeks, right? A couple of weeks now, maybe a month. They didn't. Matt Taven had a match with him and then took a lead pipe and popped his knee. That's softening him up. They did a Texas death match.
Yeah.
This is a match that in wrestling history was used to settle the most violent of blood feuds. Two people who could not keep their hands off each other. It had to be settled this way.
They were Hangman and Swerve.
That's where you need a death match or a Hell in a Cell or whatever it is.
Yeah, I hate Hell in a Cell as a pay-per-view.
And if everything's in a cage, it's not special.
A Texas death match for guys who've been feuding for 3 weeks over maybe a championship for their buddy doesn't make a lick of sense in my book.
That is a completely fair point. I didn't even factor that in. Because, see, for me, as I'm watching it, I look at this is a narrative pivot for Undisputed Kingdom because, you know, obviously Adam Cole's hurt and then MJF is taking his time off. And they had just, like, formed this faction. They needed to form this faction. They needed to get the belt off of MJF. They needed a reason, rather, to get the belt off of him. And this devil thing was, like, the way that they came about it. A lot of people weren't fans of it, and I completely understand. But I do think that this is them now just trying to establish this team, and that is, like, the sole purpose of this feud is to just make Undisputed Kingdom look like a threat in the division so that this way, you know, they have, like, a good faction that they can lean on for, you know, for some bad guys. Because, yes, AEW has been a little faction heavy from time to time, but I think you're starting to see a lot of these factions either lose steam and maybe start to dissolve, or they become something else entirely, like Blackpool Combat Club, which is less of a faction and more just a loose collection of guys who really enjoy violence. So there's no, like, I think, like, at any point in time, they'll just go their separate ways, and then when they want to come back and beat someone up, they'll just do it, you know?
Yeah.
And that seems like what Claudio and Moxley want to do, and Brian. So let them go nuts, you know?
Sure.
Like, I ain't mad about it. But you need good factions that have reasoning to exist as well. And Undisputed Kingdom definitely needs that reason. So this feud with Orange Cassidy, I think, serves that purpose of establishing Undisputed Kingdom. But I don't disagree that it doesn't serve Orange Cassidy, and it definitely doesn't serve the best friends outside of them just having, again, good matches, which is what we expect from AEW because they always produce good matches.
I just wish that they weren't called Undisputed Kingdom It, to me, it was like years ago when I saw a commercial for Fruity Cheerios. I'm like, we already have that shit. It's called Fruit Loops, and Fruit Loops does it better. Why? Why? Like,
yeah. It's the laziest name.
Yes.
Come up with.
Yes. Yeah. Like, we already have. We already had Fruit Loops. Don't come at me with Fruity Cheerios now. Do something. Yeah. Do just think of something else. Like, just the name. I think
we had the Undisputed Era. Yeah.
And I get why they sandwiched it, because it was Roderick and Cole, and then you had Taven and Bennett. So it's like, cool, we'll smush it, we'll make it work. But I totally agree. Although their logo goes hard as fuck, though. Like, their branding is tight. I love the kingdom, like the crown with the like the graffiti style and stuff. I even like their opening. I like their song. And I think this is going to be the launch pad for Wardlow V2, you know, in a similar Batista evolution vein. I think this is going to be that thing for Wardlow, because.
Yeah, but are they going to launch it this time, or is it just going to blow up on the pad? Like
that's the other thing that's happened
two times before, right?
Yeah. Right.
Different groups and different things, situations and stories.
Yeah. I feel like if you don't really hit it now, it's going to be really hard
to
hit it for him in the future. Outside of him just being like a, you know, bodyguard type wrestler, but he's good in the ring, and he's got himself at the very least that very like Warpath focused gimmick of like, I just want to destroy everyone in the ring. I've always enjoyed that gimmick, but it just feels like as well his character really struggles because of MJF, right? Like, MJF's existence just affects Wardlow's character, because like, it was fine when MJF was the bad guy, but now that MJF is the good guy, it's like, well, Wardlow, you just look like a dick, you know? And yes, I guess you are, but I don't know if that is enough to build a character off of. Anything else that has caught your eye? Oh, and also they did the TKO victory. I did like that, though, in the Orange Cassidy Matt Taven match.
Sure.
They did a TKO victory. That was kind of cool, but because you don't really get to see that all that often. But that was about it. So, yeah, anything else that's caught you guys' eye this week?
Nothing. I would just have everybody, you know, selfishly speaking, keep an eye on Mustafa Ali is debuting in TNA officially this week.
I love his gimmick right now. I'm digging this.
Yeah, the politician thing going on the world tour to change, you know, it's a bit of a make wrestling great again vibe, right?
He's kind of
putting that out. But I love it. And knowing him as well as I do and talking to him, he wants to continue to incorporate. He loves to play, because it's just that straight up politician kind of playing on those a little bit Trumpian vibes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's doing it as a person of color who goes through their own pieces. We talked a lot about, you know, things like, remember the OG Muhammad Hassan?
Yeah.
Kind of thing where it's like, that came from a cool place. This whole idea of like the way I'm treated, even though I belong here and like, and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Keep watching him. That's all. I'm not going to go on long about it. Just keep watching him. His official debut is this weekend. So,
exciting.
Keep seeing, he's going to be around for a little bit. So keep seeing what he puts out. That character is going to go some cool places.
Yeah. I feel like he's going to be on a Cody-ish type of path in his career. I'm really optimistic for him, because there was just never a doubt in anyone's mind that the guy can go in the ring. He is just stellar every single time he goes out there. And again, it was a similar issue of what we see with a lot of, you know, up and coming wrestlers. It's the, I'm a badass, I want to win, so on and so forth. And it feels like every single time he had like an opportunity to like do something, someone somewhere just stopped it in its tracks. And now a few weeks here of him doing these vignettes of him coming out and, you know, shooting his spiel and to his electorate, to his constituents. I love it. I think I love a good politician gimmick. I always enjoy it. I don't know what it is. We need more of those. Like, I loved JBL's gimmick back in the day, man. You know, like just the oil baron, like the cowbell ringing when he came out. Like, it's just, it was obnoxious. It was great. You just need more of that. And I hopefully Mustafa.
I always thought that was the opening bell for Wall Street. Isn't that what that was? The opening bell for Wall
Street? Well, it sounds like a cowbell, but yes, right. It was the opening bell for Wall Street, which also, that's fucking brilliant. Like, it's so good.
It's both.
Yeah.
It's both. And then go for it, Jake.
I was going to say the one thing that stuck out to me this week, we talked about people who give everything for the bit and give everything for the gimmick. If R-Truth does not make the Hall of Fame, I will burn this place to the ground.
He's already
in. He's so
in that Hall of Fame. He's going to be in the TNA Hall of Fame. Oh. He's going to be in every Hall of Fame.
He's incredible. I admire the hell out of R-Truth. He's also 87 years old in the best shape of any, it's unbelievable. He is timeless. R-Truth is truly timeless. He's unbelievable.
I couldn't agree more, man. He's been just, and so we did, I think that he has served his objective for the Judgment Day storyline.
Mm-hmm.
But there is going to be, I think, a deeper storyline here between Damian Priest and R-Truth. There has to be. It feels like there could be some more nuggets to drop. But I was saying this because I was also seeing a lot of people talk about this online. For me, what I would love to see happen for R-Truth is just let him get another run with the belt, right? Whether it's tag team with Miz or, you know, maybe he even scraps it up with Logan Paul for the U.S. title.
Please
bring
back.
Really good with him.
Please bring back Little Jimmy. That was one of my favorite things.
And that's what I'm saying. Can you, really think about this?
Yeah.
I know that, there's a lot of conflicting opinions on Logan Paul as a wrestler, but I'm not even a fan of the guy as a YouTuber, but
he's a good wrestler,
and he's got a beat on what his character is right now.
And it makes me hate him even more.
he knows it. He knows it very well. Who better to be folly for Logan Paul that he could learn from, that he could do some hilarious promos with, than R-Truth? Why not?
It would be good.
It would be good because he's a great wrestler. Logan Paul can really benefit from being in the ring with more veterans, right? He's only going to continue to get better, right? R-Truth wrestles a different style as well, right? It's still a very WWE style, like Miz, but it's still a good style to, work with.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have promos that he could just be like, he could play the straight man.
He's
going to
keep calling him Jake. R-Truth's going to keep calling him Jake.
Exactly. There's just so many directions they could go with it. And then, you know, either he wins the belt by a fluke and then Logan Paul, because that's how you got to bring him down, right? Right now, he's like the Maverick. He's so good. He comes out with his bright yellow pants and his headband and his Pokemon cards. And he's got himself I'm so cool. You got to knock that character down a few pegs if he's serious about sticking around. If he's not serious about continuing being a wrestler, which something tells me he is. I don't know. I would really like to see that more. What do you make of Logan Paul, Matt? I never asked you about that.
So when he first burst on to the scene and everything like that, I like a lot of people, I knew being between him and his brother, they take their athletics seriously. They're serious about getting in shape, and I knew have no doubt about that. I took a little, not umbrage, but when he had a couple of his first big matches, still throwing him in there with Roman for a
minute. That one felt weird.
So
that one
early.
It was very clear what that was for. Very clear.
He physically, yes, of course. He can hang a little bit, but he's getting better, but it took a while. The little things, his selling, his timing. Yes, you let him set up and go boingy off the rope and he can rotate and flip
Is that the official inside terminology? Boingy?
Yes.
Okay. This is what we're here for, to learn something.
Incredible athlete. But between him picking up some of those smaller things beyond just stunts, because he kind of came in and just did a stunt show with guys.
That's very true.
And the fact that he stuck for more than two or three matches.
Yeah,
and is now shows up.
It feels like he is a wrestler. He's in. I think he's in. I don't see a reason why he wouldn't be.
Yeah.
If I'm Logan Paul and I'm seeing WWE, they're one of the hottest companies right now, making good money. They're selling out shows all over the place. You're keeping your name in there. And on top of that, he was given a title. Like, if he's not sticking around, that would be genuine disappointment, because I actually think he does have something to contribute to pro wrestling.
I think he really enjoys it.
It seems like he really enjoys it.
Yeah.
You have to. And this is going to maybe be a bit controversial. I'm not trying to disparage anyone here, but it kind of runs counter to what happened with Ronda Rousey, where, like, she came in, she had, like, she has the presence because she's freaking Ronda Rousey. But it was something about, like, when she got through those ropes, it just didn't feel like it was clicking for her in the same way that it was for, you know, someone like Logan Paul. And that bums me out, because I never felt like we got a character of Ronda Rousey. We just got, I'm going to kick your ass, Ronda Rousey. And that was, like, really all you could get out of that. Maybe that was the whole purpose and objective, and then that was it, you know. And I guess it served its purpose. Whereas with Logan Paul, I'm just seeing a guy who, like, it's like almost a weird, like, Kurt Angle type of story, where it's like just a guy who is completely outside of the world, comes in, turns out he's a natural, then ends up being, like, a well-respected wrestler. I think that, I don't know, I hope that is what we end up seeing with Logan Paul. But do you feel like R-Truth could maybe work in that match, or they're just going to have to go in a different direction? Because that's the other problem that they're having right now, too.
I think everything you said about it is true. I don't think they'll do it, but I think it's true. I say this with every bit of love and respect in the world. I think Logan Paul's probably too big of a star in their mind to work with R-Truth in a thing.
Fascinating. Okay.
Generally. That said, I mean, the little bit of, like, the spike Truth has gotten in kind of attention since coming back. Like,
I mean, the crowd's white hot for him.
Yeah, like, maybe any other time it wouldn't be, which is like, look, no, we love Truth. Truth is great, but, like, Truth is an opening match guy, right? Logan Paul is one of our headline attractions. We're just not going to put them, you know, together. But if you're going to do it now-ish, maybe coming off this Judgment Day thing would be the time to do it while he does have this kind of little lightning, this flash.
Yeah, and honestly, you don't need to give Truth the belt. I don't think, like, Truth, he doesn't need it. It's R-Truth. No. I mean, I would love to see R-Truth hold the belt again, just selfishly, but he doesn't really need to. And you just continue to build up Logan Paul, because that kind of has been a problem with the United States title right now, where the Intercontinental title has been built up incredibly well, and we've seen a lot of characters get spun out from it. Actually, Chad Gable is a really good example of that, who I think benefited from that match with Gunther, and now I'm hoping we're starting to see a run for him. I don't feel the same for the United States title. I think the United States title was, they gave it to Ray because he's Ray, and, you know, Legend gets another run with a belt, and it made sense. And then Logan Paul defeating him was good, because you established Logan Paul as, like, a threat of a contender, defeating a legend, and, you know, oh my God, he did it, he upset him, you know, like, it's so good. But where, like, Kevin Owens, it's been weird. It, like, the Kevin Owens feud has genuinely been weird with Logan Paul, because it's like, it almost feels like Kevin Owens is just annoyed by the guy. And that's the whole story.
Yeah, that's Kevin.
He's just annoyed, and then that's it, you know? And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. You know, that I guess that's what we're getting here. Maybe he gets a feud, a faction. That could also be helpful for him too. Like, sure. Who are those, the new guys from NXT that came up. Oh, well, he's got Austin Theory, and then Austin Theory's boy. Maybe that's the direction they go.
Waller.
They could just be Grayson Waller, a couple fuck boys, you know, and just, like, that's their gimmick. I would vibe with that, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. But
there's potential there.
Yeah, man, there's so much happening. But I think it's a good place to end it. You guys,
I'm cool with that.
A good hour 30, you know?
Yeah.
And anything else caught your eye this week, or we'll just save it for next week?
I mean, there's always going to be more and more and more. I mean, there's so much damn content out there. We could go 8 hours each week if we wanted to, but I think we hit the main points. There's so much brewing at this time of year.
I know, and I don't even know what the hell is going to happen in Dynamite. And, of course, by the time this comes out, Dynamite will be, you know, tonight. So I could actually take a look at the card real fast just to see what we have coming up, just so we can understand where potentially stories can go. But let's see here. Should have had that already prepared. You know, look at me. I'm a terrible
host.
They got
that six-man, right?
They have a six-man match.
Swerve and Joe and Brian Cage. It feels a little random. I know there's some loose connections between the folks in that, but it feels kind of random. They've got the FTR, Blackpool Combat Club guys.
Yeah.
Deanna's wrestling. It seems like it'll be good wrestling.
Yeah, so this matchup is interesting, the Swerve being in that team, only because look at the team that Hangman's in. He's in the babyface team. Mm-hmm. So something's going to happen there. That will be quite exciting. I would assume that Rob Van Dam is going to play a factor in the finish in some capacity. And then if anything, if this leads to Hook Brian Cage, I'm down with that. That's
fine. If this spins off into other stories, otherwise it's a very random cavalcade of characters.
Yeah.
who you're interspersing with your main event feud. It's kind of mind boggling, but okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. So that's what we're going to be keeping our eye on this week. How does this six-man tag matchup go? Where do we end up going with the Cody feud? Because we haven't really even talked a lot about Cody. We talked a lot about The Rock, but Cody is, you know, there's so much to go on with him there, and we'll dive into that probably next week, because it does feel like where his story is going is Cody needs backup. So we're going to see where the chips fall there. Seth Rollins definitely throwing his hat in, which, of course, leads to the theory of the tag team match at one of the nights for WrestleMania, which, as we had said,
por qué?
Why? We have to figure that out. But guys, thank you so much for listening and watching Rebook. If you are watching on YouTube, make sure you give it a like. You can also subscribe and tell your friends about it, because I think this is a very good show. If you're listening on Spotify, I do whatever things you got to do in Spotify so that people can find out about this show. Apple Podcasts, leave a review. Maybe we'll read some reviews as well.
I like that idea.
And as we post some of these videos, because we're trying to post more of our content up, and you guys see theories that you want to kind of push, we want to explore those. So yes, maybe that's like a thing that we could do of like judging the fantasy booking from the audience that, you know, tunes into the show. So, that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for checking it out yet again for Rebook, and we'll see you next week.
Peace.